From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette. I'm Dave Gillespie. Coming up this week, the governor's got it all wrong. That's what a group of business organizations said about Cuomo's proposed Environmental Bond Act, and they've presented an alternative to the plan. We'll tell you about that. Also, the bottle industry says it's finally made profits from New York's six-year-old returnable container law. They say they've got new ammunition they believe could lead to repeal of the measure. Also, lobbyist spending is up again. We'll have the latest figures, and our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, will be joined by the New York Post's Fred Dicker. All that and lots more on this week's Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo says he accepts State Controller Edward Regan's estimates of the state's fiscal problems. Regan figures that the governor's proposed budget will still leave New York with a $1.5 billion deficit. Cuomo spokesman Gary Fryer says they'll either have to be $1.5 billion in cuts or additional revenues beyond those proposed. Meanwhile, Cuomo was not quite as accepting of Regan's recent productivity study. He says there's nothing scintillating about its findings, and he says the report was not worth $750,000 that it cost. Regan's report recommends restructuring Cuomo's Department of Social Services and streamlining the Education Department. Regan says those recommendations would save the state some $400 million in the new fiscal year that begins April 1st and $800 million the next year. Cuomo, who agreed to have the study done, did say the report had some good things in it, but not enough to justify its cost. There was plenty of environmental-related news this week. The battle over the bottle bill reared its head again. The struggle between the governor and the bottling industry has been going on for years. And this week, the bottlers again threatened to raise prices if Cuomo has his way, claiming unredeemed bottle deposits for the state treasury. Bruce Robertson has more.
Fred DiMaggio, executive director of the New York State Soft Drink Association, says last year was the first time the bottle industry profited from the returnable beverage container law since it was enacted 6 years ago. But according to industry figures, their nearly $5 million profit was the result of the lowest return rate, 59.5%, since the law was enacted.
In fact, the containers came back at the lowest rate ever, just under 60%. And the thing that it points out, it raises real questions about the effectiveness of the bottle law, and also points out the large pool of unredeemed deposits, which the governor has proposed taking, will have major impact on the consumer by way of higher prices if, in fact, he's successful.
DiMaggio says he believes that increased curbside recycling has cut into returns, with consumers opting for an easier method of leaving bottles at the curb rather than returning them to stores. He says the association's study bolsters its proposal to scrap the law entirely, although he says that probably would not happen for some time.
Well, we don't really expect there's going to be a repeal or a phase-out until there's a full implementation of curbside. And we're not calling for that immediately. We just want to call attention to the fact that the return rates are low, and that those low return rates are reflective of the fact that curbside programs are offering a more convenient system by which the consumer has to deal with the containers. And frankly, a deposit system is really an artificial piecemeal approach to dealing with a solid waste issue when compared to the solid waste programs it offered at curbside.
Fred DiMaggio, executive director of the New York State Soft Drink Association. He says if recycling continues to rise and Governor Cuomo claims the $6 million in unredeemed deposits that he says exists, the bottlers will take the loss and the prices will rise. On the opposite side of the spectrum, meanwhile, Judith Enck of the New York State Public Interest Research Group says the bottle bill has been the most successful recycling program in the state's history, and she disputes DiMaggio's claim that increased curbside recycling has anything to do with the drop in returns.
Well, I think it's an interesting theory, but probably has very little to do with reality in most parts of the state. Unfortunately, most communities do not have mandatory curbside recycling programs. In the Capital District, there are very few curbside programs that pick up glass and metals. So until we're at a point where 90% of our communities have these programs in place, it's quite premature to be speculating that these curbside recycling programs could in any way replace the effectiveness of the bottle bill.
Inc. says millions of tons of glass, aluminum, and plastic have been recycled thanks to the measure, and she says there has been a significant decrease in the amount of litter as well. Overall, Inc. says the plan has been incredibly successful. Still, she admits that it could be strengthened.
I think some of the problems are that there's not enough incentive to use refillable containers as opposed to recycling. The state has established a solid waste hierarchy where waste reduction is preferred even over recycling. And with the exception of a few brands like Stewart's Soda and Genesee Beer, you don't see much refilling of bottles going on. So we would support increasing the deposits across the board to a minimum 10 cents, but leaving it at a nickel for refillable containers.
Judith Inc. of the New York State Public Interest Research Group, and she is urging lawmakers to strengthen the measure, not repeal it. She says only when the vast majority of communities in New York have mandated curbside recycling programs in place can such discussions take place. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
Governor Cuomo didn't take criticism just from bottlers this week. As Inga Sarda reports, a number of business organizations also levied heavy criticism against his proposed $1.9 billion bond act.
According to the group, the Environmental Priorities Alliance, too much money is allotted for land acquisition and not enough towards helping localities close landfills and clean up toxic waste. Spokeswoman Marilyn Salvione.
In 1965, 1972, and 1986, each of these years in which the public voted overwhelmingly for environmental bond acts, most of the bond funds went to help localities with their environmental cleanup programs. Second, where land acquisition funds were included, they were a small part of the Bond Act, $350 million in 1972 and $250 million in 1986. As you can see from the charts here in front, there are literally hundreds of municipal landfills that under state mandate must be closed within the next couple of years. The cost will be staggering, and my business colleagues back home are appalled at the specter of a further sharp rise in their real estate and sales taxes if there isn't sufficient state help to meet these environmental mandates.
According to Salvione, Cuomo's plan provides $1 billion for land acquisition. Her group recommends $250 million go toward that goal, while the rest go toward the other environmental needs of each locality. The group also wants to establish a matching grant formula between the state and localities. Bob Weibolt is the executive vice president of the New York State Builders Association.
Now, what we're saying is let the state use its bonding facility to float a bond issue that allows a matching program, which automatically, by the way, doubles the amount of money going into the facility. If the local government has to match it 50%, you're really going to see a $2-point-some-odd-billion effort here. In essence, a local government could then choose. In one community, it may be toxic waste cleanup sites. It may be another, they may be choking on garbage, and a landfill closure may be in order there. In another place, it simply may be a sewer moratorium it's trying to solve. And I think basically that because there's a local input of funds in our requirement, we're talking about a program that will make a lot of sense and let the priority be determined where the impact is greatest in the local government.
Chuck Starro is with the New York State Realtors Association. We asked him about the feeling on the part of some that realtors do not want to see major land acquisition because there would be less development and thus less money for them.
I think if we set that aside for a second, just stop and think that if no development, no further development were to take place, if no further resales were to take place in the state of New York, the problem with the infrastructure as it presently is constituted, if that is not attended to in the very near future, that those dwellings that now exist, the businesses that now exist, would in fact be suffocated. Because without the embellishment of the infrastructure as it presently exists, even what is existing today will no longer continue to flourish. So let's take private enterprise out of it and just think about what we've got to attend to. And I think that perhaps you can readily see why we are concerned over this particular issue.
And if persuasion doesn't work, threats may. Salvione reminds those of recent warnings by State Comptroller Ed Regan, telling state officials to clean up their budgetary acts.
Just 3 weeks ago, State Comptroller Regan cautioned that there is no more time to wait for fiscal reform. He warned that if the proposed 1990 Environmental Bond Act is placed on the ballot without such fiscal reforms, he will turn the bond debate into a public referendum on the state's financial practices. In stripping away the budget items, in modifying the land acquisition to a responsible level, and in providing a positive means for local governments to fund half of the cost of their mandated cleanups through the state bond, the Alliance has taken a long step toward that fiscal reform.
The group says it will lobby vigorously for these reforms. If the changes are not made, members say they will then vigorously lobby against Cuomo's entire plan. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Inga Sarda.
State Assembly Speaker Mel Miller this week proposed a $46 million program to build community treatment centers for drug-addicted mothers and their children. Miller, the legislature's top Democrat, said he made the proposal because women seeking drug treatment often have to give up their children to foster care.
We have, in this state, a growing number of women with children and women who are pregnant, severely addicted either to drugs or to alcohol. And in many instances, these women don't come into treatment for a very simple reason. Coming into treatment today means your child is taken away from you, family is separated, you end up in foster care. And so what you do is lose two things. In many instances, you lose the mother, and you don't only lose the mother, you either lose the children or the children-to-be.
Miller says the residential drug treatment program for mothers and children would begin with the building of 8 support communities. 2 would be constructed in New York City, the rest scattered across the state.
And the uniqueness of this is to bring all the social services now that are so disparate, from job training to education to inpatient treatment, outpatient treatment, to counseling, to prenatal, postnatal treatment, to bring them to the same place, all together in daycare, bring them together and unite them in this kind of treatment.
Miller says the money for construction of the family centers could be taken out of the $210 million that Governor Cuomo has said should go to the construction of drug treatment facilities in the new fiscal year. Meanwhile, members of the Assembly Republican minority announced that they had revised their Omnibus Substance Abuse Control Act, first unveiled last year, to allow those arrested on drug possession charges to seek voluntary treatment instead of jail time. The Republican legislators say that the treatment option should be available for possession of any drug, everything from marijuana to heroin. The treatment option wouldn't be available if other non-possession charges were involved. Also, the GOP called for an income tax checkoff system like the current Gift to Wildlife program. They told a news conference the plan could raise $75 million annually to battle drug abuse. Here now with a look at some other happenings this week in state politics is Paul Rosenthal with the Legislative Notebook.
The State Department of Environmental Conservation has proposed new emission standards designed to reduce pollution generated by automobiles, but auto industry critics at a public hearing this week said the regulations are unnecessary. The DEC wants New York State to adopt vehicle emission standards identical to those of California to take effect during the 1993 model year. The DEC says automobile emissions and pollution from upwind sources cause 80% of the state's ozone problems. California emission controls are the strictest in the country. But critics say the state's actions are superfluous because Congress is likely to impose nationwide standards later this year. According to Environmental Conservation Commissioner Thomas Joerling, the California regulations are superior to the federal controls pending in Congress. He said the state had no choice but to act because it's taken the federal government far too long. Joerling says by adopting the California emission standards, New York will send a clear message that the auto industry must produce cars that are clean, durable, fuel-efficient, and environmentally safe.
Under the Clean Air Act, there's only one jurisdiction that has the ability to regulate automobiles, and that is the state of California. All other states cannot regulate the automobile unless, under federal law, we adopt exactly what California has adopted. And that's what these regulations propose to do. They will produce a clean, durable car. 100,000-mile performance, 90% of the vehicles produced on the assembly line will meet the standards, and the standards themselves will be much improved over what we presently have available for sale in New York.
The DEC plans to have final regulations in place by this fall. New York's Attorney General has tried to protect car buyers by recently proposing to strengthen the state's lemon law. Well, this week, Robert Abrams submitted another consumer protection bill to the legislature. This bill would protect New Yorkers who buy extended service contracts for appliances, electronic equipment, and other major purchases. Abrams explains the bill.
We've got to do something to better protect these people. Some of the biggest stores in the business have gone bankrupt in the last year or so. Crazy Eddie, Sounds Great, Jay Burnham's, Rusty Jones. These kinds of bankruptcies are found throughout the marketplace. And so the concept here is to require any company that sells these kinds of extended service contracts to be bonded, so that if they do go out of business, there's at least a fund of money available to make restitutions, to give refunds on a proportionate basis to those people who are still holding their contracts. I think this is a very sound and basic and equitable concept that should be ingrained in the law, and that's why I'm hoping the legislature will respond to my call.
Attorney General Robert Abrams. Bias against older workers is preventing thousands of willing New Yorkers from getting jobs and could threaten the state economy. That's according to Jane Gould, director of the State Office for the Aging. She said there are about 100,000 people over the age of 55 who want to work but cannot find a job, and the state is facing a worker shortage at the same time. Gould released a report on New York's aging workforce. It spelled out the dramatic differences in the economic status of older people who work and those who don't. The annual median income of workers over age 55 is $22,760. For people over age 55 who do not work, it's $6,715 per year. 250 pro-choice advocates this week descended upon the state capitol in Albany for a day of lobbying. The New York State chapter of the National Abortion Rights Action League organized the event. Spokeswoman Vera Schneider says lawmakers must protect a woman's right to choose an abortion and maintain Medicaid funding for poor women's abortions. She also says that although New York's abortion right laws are strong, pro-choice believers must remain politically active.
Legislators for years have been hearing from anti-choice constituents because pro-choice people figured their rights were protected by the Supreme Court ruling in Roe versus Wade, and we've seen that's just not true. And I don't want anyone to think that New York State is safe and we can rest on our laurels, because our work is only just beginning.
Meanwhile, pro-life forces simultaneously held a news conference and called for an end to Medicaid funding for abortions. And finally, the state Senate passed legislation that would grant the Department of State regulatory power over real estate appraisers. State Senate Majority Leader Ralph Marino says his bill gives the state the power to confer and revoke the title of certified real estate appraiser. That's this week's Legislative Notebook. I'm Paul Rosenthal.
Spending by lobbyists in the Empire State is up again. For that story, Brian Shields.
Louis Catronup is the executive director of New York State's Temporary Commission on Lobbying. He says lobbyist spending reached $26 million last year. That's up from $22 million in 1988, a rise of 18%. We asked him why the big increase.
The increase we're finding is closely associated to when we have a tight budget crisis. We find that there's a very large representation in Albany in order for people to preserve those pieces of the budget pie that need to be saved, as well as people looking for inclusions into the budget. For example, last year in 1989, the Cable TV Association spent $412,000 in order to lobby against the sales tax, which they successfully avoided. The municipalities, the City of New York, spent $516,000. The School Teachers Association, United Teachers Association, CSEA, school boards, all spent funds well above $250,000 each in order to represent their constituent groups.
Catrona also says the increase was caused by the drive to ban smoking in public. As you might recall, last year the state legislature was considering bills to ban smoking in many public places and to raise state taxes on cigarettes. The bills ultimately became laws, but Catrona says the tobacco industry spent big bucks trying to defeat the measures.
Philip Morris spent the most of any client by spending $744,000 in lobbying the smoking legislation, as did R.J. Reynolds, and spending $270,000. Combined, over $1 million were spent by these two companies in lobbying legislation dealing with smoking restrictions.
According to Catrona, lobbying expenditures have grown 45% in the past 2 years. He also says that such spending is higher only in the nation's capital and California. Celia Wexler is the legislative director for Common Cause. For years, the group has been concerned that lobbyist spending provides access to and thus influence on state lawmakers. She says she's pleased the tobacco industry's vigorous lobbying efforts failed, though she says it took far too long.
I suppose it offers a hope that ultimately the public may be served well in the legislature, but I don't think we really have to be put to the test of waiting years and years for what we think good ought to be accomplished. How many healthy lives perhaps were compromised by this kind of delay in this thing? If when we talk about the tobacco legislation, and we can certainly point to other issues, where I think harm really was done because special interests delayed good bills that should have been made into law much sooner than they were.
Wexler also says more can be done to control lobbyist spending.
I think the commission has, for several years, wanted to require more disclosure of any expense, really, in the service of lobbying, which would probably show that the industry is even bigger than we think. We certainly have supported more disclosure. We would like to see something that's related to lobbying, which is more effective and more stringent and lower limits on contributions by special interests, both to legislators and to legislative committees.
Celia Wexler of Common Cause. She says she's doubtful any significant reforms will occur, at least in the near future. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok, joins us next. He's joined by New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker to talk about plenty of political happenings as well as New York's budgetary woes.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post, let me ask you question number one.
Shoot.
There seems to be a little bit of a budget flap here between several of the players. I guess as the scarce resources get scarcer, we're going to see more and more of this. Let's try this combination, Ned Regan and Governor Cuomo.
Well, right now they seem to be in a bit of an alliance. Both agree the state has about a $1.5 billion deficit for this year and the coming year, which begins April 1, the coming state fiscal year. And it's sort of an unusual alliance of a Democrat and Republican.
But we found yesterday is that Ned Regan came out with a study that had been commissioned. He had commissioned from Arthur Anderson, which supposedly cost $750,000. I was talking to the governor, and the governor said, I'm not going to pay for that study.
Well, let's keep in mind, the governor's not going to be asked to pay for that study. I heard your interview with him, and it was very interesting. But I thought he was being a little bit cute. This is money that the state comptroller, Alan, says is going to come out of his budget. The state comptroller, after all, is a separately elected member of the executive branch. So who said that the governor was supposed to pay for the study?
Mm-hmm. And the governor made
Don't you think he was trying to be a little cute on that?
Well, no, but I think...
Why was he saying that? Because nobody had said to him, Governor, you're being asked to pay for this.
Well, I think what he was saying is, I think he was trying to make the point that what was coming out of the budget study, that huge study, was so off the top of their heads that it was...
I don't know what his point was. Maybe he didn't like the conclusions, Alan, which suggested that at the very least $400 million a year could be saved if the state would take some tough but perhaps... from a management point of view, wise steps to have a greater efficiency in government. After all, implicit in that report, I think you would agree, is a criticism of how the governor has been running the executive branch, because Regan's study by an independent and presumably objective firm, a very famous firm, Arthur Anderson and Company, says there's at least $400 million in unnecessary spending that could be saved quickly.
Well, Fred, just not to argue the governor's point for him.
No, feel free. I think you're comfortable doing it.
Because I am not him, and I'm not comfortable doing it, but he made the point that, look, some of these are political decisions, like raising the SUNY tuition.
No question, although that's not where the $400 million was identified. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, let me just say, if in fact there is $400 million in unnecessary spending, do you think the governor on your show would sit back and say, aha, I've been wrong that low these 7 years, Alan. I have been spending $400 million a year I shouldn't have spent.
Well, he made it clear, on the other hand, that the report was generally favorable and said there was nothing mismanagement, there was no mismanagement going on in the agencies, although there were some places, obviously, you can tie tighten up, and he said, well, you can tighten up, you can always tighten
up. But that's classic Cuomo, because you can't have it both ways. You can't, on the one hand, say that the savings are really not significant because they didn't have that much time to find them, and then on the other hand, say, aha, but this is a great report because it found no waste. I mean, how can you find major waste in a 3.5-week study? If you read the report, which I have, it makes clear it was an attempt to do a conceptual analysis about the organizational structure of the executive branch. It wasn't a detailed look at every single state agency.
Okay, Fred, the Senate Republicans and Cuomo on the budget.
Ah, well, there's the biggest gulf. And it's not just between the Senate Republicans and the governor, but it's also between the Senate Republicans and Ned Regan. The Senate Republicans say that there's at least $350 or $400 million more than both Regan and the governor say. But to put this in the proper, unique perspective, neither side, and certainly not the Senate Republicans, are saying that extra money, which they say will be there, should be spent. What they're arguing over is how bad the situation is, how much cutting will have to be go on in programs, and probably most significantly, how many new taxes are going to have to be raised. Because the bottom line in all this, I think you'd agree, is that there are going to have to be many new taxes to close whatever the deficit is. The difference is the governor, in particular, wants to increase the state's personal income tax by doing away with a reduction that's now taken effect, while the Senate Republicans are saying, no, that's sacrosanct. We're going to try to do everything we can to retain the lower personal income tax. That's where the fight is. We only have about less than 3 weeks to go. My prediction is that we're going to see a budget not adopted on time.
Now, what happens if a budget doesn't get adopted on time? Ned Regan was saying he's not going to pay anybody in scrip. State workers is going to be chaos. And he said, let's see who blinks first. What do you mean by that?
It's very interesting. Well, I mean, he has a lot of power. He can decide, as he has in the past, not to pay state workers unless there's actual money to pay them. And maybe more importantly, he can decide not to sign a statement which is designed to allow the state to borrow the money it needs to keep functioning. We have such a huge debt, and we're ending this current fiscal year with about a $700 million deficit, that the state has to go to Wall Street to say, please sell our short-term notes, so that we can pay our bills. Now, if Ned Regan says the budget's not balanced, if he refuses to certify it, chances are the state won't be able to borrow. So he has very serious power. But there is an intermediate measure or step that could be taken when we've seen it before. Conceivably, Alan, the legislature could pass just enough budget bills to keep the state workers working, to keep the state programs functioning, and pay any debt that's owed on any notes that are sold. But they could still stop short of adopting some of the governor's other programs or increasing spending. That's possibly what could happen, and if that happens, chances are the budget fight's going to drag out for many more months.
Next question, and that comes down to Mario Cuomo and the presidency. What's happening?
Well, I think we've seen a couple of stories recently, a half a dozen or so, which have suggested that the state's fiscal crisis, and it is a crisis, could be damaging the governor's reputation nationally. The Times suggested he could kind of become Dukakized, as in your governor from Massachusetts. I think it's true. I think the governor has shown very little interest in the national scene, except speaking out on some key national issues, but he has not in any way indicated that he's going to be in there fighting. Obviously, we have President Bush, who's quite popular at the moment. The governor is a very smart politician. He's not going to run in a race where he can't win. And number two, the tide or the corner may have been turned. The tide may have changed on the governor's stature. He is, after all, a northeastern liberal at a time when liberalism isn't exactly universally popular in the United States. And more specifically, the state is in big trouble, and he, whether he deserves it or not, is going to get some of the blame, from crime to crack to AIDS. Most importantly, the state's economy, very, very serious problems. Next couple of years may not be good years for Governor Cuomo, and will make it less likely for him to be able to be a strong presidential contender.
New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker speaking with our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok. And that does it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The program is produced by Inga Sarda with technical assistance from Phil Sluzars. The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallettly.